Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the show. Sendejas on the air. He's our special guest tonight, and I'm going to review what we're talking about tonight. First, I'm starting with a radical topic, what a violent confrontation between leftists and conservatives will solve. So we've seen many confrontations in the streets of America the last year or two. One of the most poignant ones is the George Floyd Minneapolis takedown of Minneapolis by protesters and the 300 buildings that were burned. There was recently one in Kenosha and again now in Kentucky tonight with the Breonna Taylor decision by the Attorney General of the state. We are facing major cultural clashes in America. And my main question to the audience is, what is the comfortable class willing to sacrifice? And on the Republican side of it, is it mainly only about self-preservation? What do they fear? Is self-preservation working? And are they more comfortable even with the President of the United States during many of the cultural conflicts that are causing more people to be extreme on both sides? So I'm just going to read a small clip, and then I'm going to read a question about the Supreme Court. So what if the voice of reason wins and all the creepazoids go back into their prehistoric caves and really realize there are more issues than abortion? What will happen if Joe Biden wins and all races are protected and exalted and there will be a circulatory discussion about a reasonable police force, police community relations, raising the bar on the black and American Mexican wages and Mexicans themselves further out of poverty, preaching togetherness instead of separateness. Will the hidden armed militia of the Trump family take to the streets if a Democratic candidate wins the presidential election? Will there be blood, or will people just bicker and fight 4 more years and we have to listen to Trump's daily rants on how he's one step down from the famous Abraham Lincoln, as he said today, and greater than ever, while the other side of the fence placates the white suburbanites who want to redo their lawn and hate black people. No, I know I'm using extreme language and Wade wouldn't approve of this, but what I'm trying to say is people who have followed the status quo their whole life and not risked anything, and now they're facing a societal confrontation where they're forced to make a decision or take a stand, what do those people have to lose? And if Trump loses, is all hell going to break loose on the other side? So I was reading a couple of briefings tonight. One was in the New York Times. Believe it or not, there's been some debate about whether the Supreme Court justices should have life tenure. The Constitution established lifetime judicial appointments to insulate federal judges from undue political influence in the public life. In other words, if you're appointed for life and you can't be voted out, then you can kind of trust your own legal sales to make expressions without retribution. But on the other hand, things change radically in society, like the gay agenda. Like 40 or 50 years ago, not that many gay people were rallied up, and they didn't pit their case against the national government. They were fighting local areas like Frisco. And now if a judge lives 80 to 90 years and things change radically in that judge's lifetime, is it going to be one judge that's going to hold up the other 7 or 8 in making decisions? So it's possible that it has shown through studies that the antiquated nature of the late monarchical system causes dysfunction within the U.S. Constitution. In other words, if there's no bending or flexibility, then how do we know how effective the Supreme Court is going to be measured against cultural chains? So I'm not going to go into my second topic tonight, which was going to be the military pilot who is running against Mr. Mitch McConnell in Kentucky. She's a mother. She's a Democrat. She used to be a fighter pilot. Her name's Amy McGrath, and she's within 4 percentage points of Mitch McConnell. I did read her profile picture and her stance, and she's mainly concerned about the 1 million Kentuckians who were displaced. They were displaced because of COVID, and that state's going broke. Some of their counties and county seats are going broke. They have no revenue, and they're in a crisis. So that's probably why she's doing so well in the polls. With that, I'll bring in Daniel first and then Wade, who called in second. Hi, Daniel. How's it going tonight?
It's going well. How you doing?
I'm good. I just got home from a 9-hour shift. It's been pretty rough. I'm glad to hear your voice. Are you back at your school job?
I'm still working from home. It's been 6 months now.
Okay, and you don't do any interfacing directly with the kids?
I do, actually. I prepare curriculum in the mornings, and then in the afternoons I teach a couple of classes.
Great.
Through Zoom.
Well, I'm glad that you guys get some interaction with the kids. With that, I'll bring Wade in. Good evening, Wade. How's your night going?
Good evening, Jane. I'm doing good. I got you on speaker. Let me know if there's a sound issue.
Okay.
I'm doing okay.
That's cool. So I'm going to start with our special guest tonight and see what's on his mind, Wade.
Sure.
Wade, I'm going to mute you for like a minute, okay? And then I'll bring you back in. So, Daniel, what did you think of my introduction?
It was very eloquent. Well said.
And do you think everybody's aware of all the tensions that our country's facing with COVID, with safety and security, with unemployment, with racial tensions. What strikes you as a measuring point with about only 42 days left of the election?
It's really crazy. I mean, because when it first, when everything first started happening, I mean, with COVID, I figured, well, this is the time for us to really, come together and, set aside differences. And if anything, it's only made it worse. You know, I've never seen in my lifetime the country be so divided, and I think part of it is because people are stuck at home and, they probably have more time to read or just, feel frustrated with the situations that they're dealing with. You know, some people are losing their jobs, losing their homes, and they want to, take it out on anybody, So not to say that, things aren't happening, but I think being alive, as long as I've been alive, I haven't been alive too long, but, being part of protests, and being part of, movements or whatever, I've definitely been able to see this now as, I would say, as an outsider, because I'm not out there doing that anymore. I mean, like, now I'm a family man, so, and for other reasons, too, but, yeah, it's just
what
really
percent of the population do you think is stuck at home? Like, I'd say the healthcare workers are about 20% of the population. Wade, you're off mute, too.
Yep.
What percent do you think are really stuck at home?
I think it depends, honestly. But, I mean, for example, my partner, she's still working. I mean, she's going to work every day. I'm here by myself. I think I would probably say anywhere from 20 to 30% of people are stuck at home. And, if you don't have anything to do, I mean, if you're going to go, you're going to go nuts and you're going to go crazy and you're going to, and we saw it happening with the first set of, a protest. I mean, people were just literally going crazy and destroying things, So
I agree with that.
Yeah.
Also, there's people who collected double income on unemployment for about 6 months, and perhaps the wise people managed their money and the other people just pissed it away and then they found themselves being more broke after their unemployment ran out.
Yep.
So there's probably people like that out there too.
Mm-hmm.
So, Wade, what do you have to say about our current topic we're discussing?
Yeah, I mean, definitely, people touched on the violence and the isolation. Someone will have to speak a little bit for Trump without John here. So I don't think it's always fair to blame all the division on him. We were really divided under Obama too. I mean, we're just divided, and we ended up with Trump out of the division. And I don't think he's trying to divide, but people don't like him and don't want to. A lot of the Democrats will turn against everything he tries to do.
Let me ask you this about Trump.
Sure.
Wade, and also Daniel, with the recent information that came out that by Bob Woodward that he was more aware of the potential danger of COVID and its deadliness, but he didn't let that out to the public because he's kind of like the type to smooth things over. With that information, and last night I observed at his Pennsylvania rally, everybody was shoulder to shoulder without masks. The only people wearing masks was about 6 out of 20 people standing behind him. So it is kind of a strange because, like, when he's having White House press conferences, people are abiding by wearing masks. But then when he's at rallies, it's go for broke. Like, nobody's paying attention. And I'm not one of the people that blame Trump for all the deaths in America. I'm sure he could have handled it better. But people have to take into account that tragedies are tragedies. just like Hurricane Katrina was under Bush, but Bush did do a terrible job in that sense.
Yeah, I mean, I think the reason why Trump does get a lot of blame for what's going on is because his inflammatory comments. Honestly, I mean, I'm not necessarily against Trump, not for him either, but I think because he's not well spoken like Obama was, or like previous presidents. I think he's an easy target to really blame him because of that. You know what I mean? Like, it feels like anytime he says something, it becomes like a controversial speaking point. You know, I mean, and at this point, even if he says something that's not necessarily that controversial, those who are against Trump, I mean, they're just going to be against him regardless, But
yeah.
As far as, like, the whole COVID situation and him, being blamed for that, I mean, when you're the face of the country, I mean, either you're going to get praised for what you do or you're going to get blamed for what you do. And, unfortunately, he's dealing with this, during his 4 years here. So, it's like, I mean, it's kind of hard to really, say, well, he's not, responsible for it. I mean, but like I said, I mean, when you're the face of the country, I mean, you're going to take the heat or you're going to get a praise. So
I think most of his talking points are often, and you're right on the mark with that, and I'll let you go next, Wade. Most of Trump's talking points are either defensive or offense. He's never just providing information for the general public. He's either attacking someone or responding to something, and he doesn't do it in a proper way. He's always on the attack. And I was going to read one tweet for you tonight, just a second, that he wrote. Wade, why don't you go ahead and talk while I'm looking for it?
Yeah, I mean, I think Daniel nailed it really well. I definitely agree. And the thing is, and maybe this, maybe this isn't a well-accepted point. This is an area where I would agree with John. I think CNN, MSNBC, they are on the Democrat side by far. Clearly, they are nowhere in the middle. I think they are, one guy I've heard describe it as activists disguised as journalists. These guys are promoters of the Democrat Party. I think if you look and watch them, you never hear a Republican point of view. And so,
are you talking about CNN?
CNN and MSNBC and a lot of other groups. Of course, like the Young Turks. But, so if those are the sources of news that people get, they're only going to hear that they're going to hear. Well, what happens too is, I mean, Trump will say something very reasonable and they turn it into, they twist it to sound like something very unreasonable. An example is Very Fine People, him calling fascists Very Fine People, which is not even true. He was referring to people that happened to be at that location at the time, and things like that. Like, they'll twist what people say. There's videos where you can almost see, like, just directly. There's a video with Candace Owens talking to senators, and you can blatantly see them twisting her words. Sometimes it gets pretty obvious.
Yeah, I do think I was reviewing some of Trump's tweets, and well, I saw an interview with him from yesterday where he said that no one's done more for the blacks except for me besides Abraham Lincoln. And he goes, I'll give Abraham Lincoln kudos this one time or something to that effect. But I feel like his language and using words like terrific all the time, and he tries to condense things too much. He can't grapple complex issues, and he also insulted Joe Biden's ability to command government. And I don't know, I just generally I find him offensive, but I'm more, even when he was in my state in a rural city of 20,000, he was attacking Ilhan Omar, the Muslim congresswoman from up here, and he really doesn't have a handle on why she was elected. She's from it was a busy part of Minneapolis, and there's a lot of Muslims there, but there's also a lot of Jews in her district. So I just wish he would approach things more like Barack Obama in an intellectual manner.
Well, he'll attack his opponents because, you know, like that's kind of politics too. Maybe like he doesn't sound as nice as Obama. Daniel had mentioned that, and that's true. Like I thought too. Like, wow, Obama sounds pretty smooth, but then people would point out, but look at the things Obama's doing, and there was more criticism. The critics of Obama didn't complain about how he talked; they complained about his policies. Now, as far as, also Ilhan Omar is also a political opponent. Her values are very different. You know, it doesn't have to do with her being Muslim or a person of color. She has very different values from Trump and the Republicans.
Well, he said, Ilhan Omar, how did she ever get elected? Like, it's crass the way he goes about it. But Daniel, I have a question for you since you live in a populated state, and now Wade's been commuting between Arizona and California too. But what is the most negative side effects from COVID that you guys have both witnessed? I'll start with Daniel, living in the most populous state in the nation.
Well, I mean, I think because of that, I mean, like, I know that Los Angeles has, you know, faced, have had a lot of deaths or cases because of, the high numbers, and, you know, the population is just, you know, is big here. So, and just the way I was a big critic of the way we first addressed it, because I feel like the face mask should have been the first thing we should have used, you know, as opposed to quarantine for like 2 weeks or whatever it was in the beginning, you know.
Yeah, like the first line of defense.
Yes, you know, we went about it backwards, you know. So because of that, people were still getting sick. I feel like if we would have, you know, had done that, then, you know, the numbers would have dropped. And then obviously we had the protest. I mean, whether you like it or not, I mean, I had a huge impact on the cases going up again, you know, all over the country.
Mm-hmm.
And my issue with that was that, you know, to even bring that up was problematic, because, you know, if you said that, you were automatically called a racist or, you know, or whatever. And I mean, at this point, like, people are just, you know, it almost feels like I'm watching a football game here. People are fanatics at this point. They're not even using logic. They're not using facts. People are just blinded by their
they're just choosing
politics.
To like believe their own hype.
Yes. I mean, like, the fact that a face mask has been politicized is ridiculous to me. You know what I mean? Like, it's common sense. You know, if you don't use it, I mean, you know, but some people don't want to use it because, you know, like, oh, it's a conspiracy. You know, it's not really happening. You know what I mean? Like, it's become, I mean, I said this before we even got to the election, that the whole COVID thing was going to be used, you know, to
as a political
sway
tool.
People to, yes. So, for example, you know, like, the Democrats are going to say, oh, you know, we try to keep you safe. You know, we try to, give you, money, whatever, to keep you at home. And then the Republicans are going to say, you know, we try to save your jobs. We try to save the economy, right? But in reality, there's a little bit of truth, in, I guess, in both of them, but they're just swaying people to the other side. And something like this should have united the whole country, and it didn't. So, I mean, at this point, I feel like whatever happens, like you said, you know, in the beginning, whoever ends up winning, it's going to cause, you know, a massive, you know, protest.
Or upheaval,
you know,
right?
You know, exactly right. So we're living.
I was 40 in 2000 when
they
couldn't straighten the vote out with George Bush and Al Gore. And I think all mayhem's going to break loose no matter who wins. But I really think, honestly, I don't think Joe Biden has more than a 45% chance of winning.
Nope.
Unless something major, major happens. Like, there's all some kind of sweeping, massive death in the next 42 days. Huh. But I don't think he, no matter how rebellious Donald Trump is, I think Biden has a slim chance because he hasn't been exposed in the media as much as Trump has.
Yep.
So, Wade, did you have a comment?
Sure, yeah. I mean, yeah, I think Daniel nailed it again. I'm glad that it seems like we see things similarly. Yeah, everything's politicized. Everything seems to be a wedge to blame other people, and there's so much radicalization. I think people are understandably skeptical with the whole COVID too, because there's been so much lying and dishonesty. Mm-hmm. And I kind of felt that way at first. I'm like, oh, here we go again. They're scaring us with another, here's the drama of the month. But now it's like, wow, okay, I guess this thing's pretty serious and I wear a mask. Yeah. And I wanted to comment too, we're talking about Trump and the insults and, yeah, I also remember like back with Romney, he was being called a white supremacist and fascist, and he's pretty mellow, I think. And
well,
so
now
we
he said
think,
he's going to
yeah.
vote. He'll go along with the Republicans on the Supreme Court vote. Now, I actually
yeah.
like Mitt Romney a lot for a long time. Like, if I was forced to vote Republican, I'd rather have someone like him in office than a Bush or somebody else.
Yeah. I would like Ron Paul, but I don't think that's going
to
happen.
I do like Ron Paul, and I used to like his
yeah.
son Rand Paul, but sometimes Rand Paul goes off the deep end too much.
Yeah.
He was bullied by a neighbor
too.
2 years ago.
Yeah. So I mean, insults are coming from both ends, too, and it happens a lot in politics. And it was like, you know, Don Lemon, I think, that said, like, the problem in this country is white males. And I'm like, I don't hear, I hardly ever heard any Republican leader say anything that racist. That's, I think, really racist. And so,
I think
yeah,
it's racist to generalize like that, but there is a
yeah.
portion of Minnesota and the northwestern part of the state where when people are going along with Donald Trump's rhetoric at the rallies and they're very subversive and anti-immigrant and stuff, it is rather disturbing to me. And in that part of the country, in northwestern Minnesota, it is white males.
Okay. I mean, that's a shame that that's what they're getting is this anti-immigrant message, because I don't think the Republican leadership are not anti-immigrant. They're taking a stand on illegal immigration, but not legal immigration. And there's a distinction, too, between civic nationalists and white nationalists. And, you know, I would sympathize more with civic nationalists that just want American principles preserved, like freedom of speech and things like that, as opposed to
right,
trying
like,
to maintain like a yeah,
you
racial
touched
homogeneity.
On a point about the, you know, the extreme radicalness of people expressing themselves. There doesn't seem to be a middle ground. And one of the
yeah.
reasons is because of the issues themselves. Like, the Second Amendment argument is way far-fetched. And I'm going to read to you what my conservative cousin wrote in Montana, but can you guys talk while I bring it up? I have to bring it up on my screen. Because this is more like of a middleman. She's more of a moderate in one sense, where she's not using inflammatory speech. But on the other hand, I felt like some of her arguments were weak. So, Daniel, why don't you talk for a minute while I'm looking this information up?
Yeah, I wanted just to make a point on about the whole, you know, white males being a problem, whatever Don Lemon said. I think that comment in itself is problematic because I feel like a lot of kids, a lot of white kids, you know, who are growing up in today's society, you know, probably, you know, grew up with parents that, you know, weren't racist, right?
Yeah.
Whether they live in suburbia or not, but seeing all the stuff you see today, you know, on TV with like the protests, I mean, and if anything, that's going to make it more racist, you know what I mean? Like, because they're going to experience this, you know, like, oh, well, if you see this, well, people of color are behaving this way. I mean, like, then it's probably true, you know?
Absolutely.
So if anything, we're going backwards, you know what I mean? Like, I feel like we had so much progress, you know, in the last, you know, 50, 60 years with all the policies, you know, with all the laws that, you know, that have changed, you know, in the years. And I think our generation, you know, like the millennial generation, I think, is so the most privileged generation that the U.S. has ever had. And they're so bored.
This,
you know,
generation?
The millennial generation, I think. You know?
They are, because my son, he's barely scraped a knee outside playing in the backyard like we used to. By the time he was 15 years old, he had at least 10 $60 games and two Xbox units that were worth $300 each. He's put himself in, he's allowed himself to suffer by working out every day now for 9 months, but he could easily choose being a couch potato. And he's never gone hungry.
Exactly. And I think because of that, a lot of millennials, and I include myself in that conversation because, I mean, I'm part of that generation too, but, like, we don't really have something that we're known for. I mean, like, the previous generations, they had World War II, they had Vietnam, you know, you had, you know, the movements in the 60s. I mean, what do we have? You know, we're the computer generation. I mean, we've had it all. I mean,
you have 9/11. Weren't you born in 87?
86.
Okay, so how old were you when 9/11 happened? Like, in your teens?
I was in ninth grade when it happened. Yeah. So, like, yeah, like,
I mean, like,
I, just,
it
know,
was
they,
only one day though, but it did cause a war in Afghanistan.
Exactly.
But I see what you mean as far as, I think what you're saying is that you don't have an anchor in your generation to identify with.
Maybe it's happening now.
No. Yep.
I definitely think it is, as far as the revised racist movement, racism in America.
Yeah. And,
so
and
I'm going to read something
Daniel
to
point?
You guys quick, okay? And Wade had a good thread on his wall, too, but I can't bring it up right now. By the way, I do have one friend who's 31. She's on Snapchat. She's on Twitter. She's on Instagram. She's on Facebook. And all her and her friends do all day is post little ditties about their lives and jokes. And I'm just wondering if she ever lifts her head off of the computer. But let me just go back into this thing, and then you guys can comment on my thread. So I wrote this on my Facebook wall. In reference, somebody posted something about the Gospel of John and the meaning of Christianity. So this was my response, because she was talking about how Trump wants to defend the Christians, but he doesn't show other fruits of the Spirit. So I wrote, in reference to the Gospel of John post below on this wall, Americans can be proud for some of the freedoms they have experienced throughout their life. However, growing up in the 70s, my country killed over 110,000 Southeast Asians through bombing and warfare, not counting the body count between South and North Vietnamese. We killed over 209,000 Iraqis between 2003 and 2009, and most of those were civilians. We fueled the Iran-Iraq war, and over 500,000 died in that war. We supplied Iraq with the weapons. Commenting on the claim that Donald Trump is a Christian and upholds Christians' values, I ask you this. Has he ever repented of a sin, or has he ever apologized for a rude comment to his perceived enemy? Has he ever exhibited humility, or does he just finger point? Do his speeches ever involve his own creative policy agendas that he created to improve the system, or are they attacks on past presidents? Have you ever heard Jesus give a sermon saying, "Lock up Pontius Pilate, the heck with the Sanhedrin Jews. The people who don't believe in me, I don't like them, so I won't give them relief during a fire." No, Jesus said, "Turn the other cheek, pray for those who persecute you, give unfailingly to others, even your own cloak." When I witness Donald Trump behaving as a Christian in the future, I will give him a chance. Until then, I won't buy the garbage Trumpsters inflict on me daily. Every president who has withstood scrutiny never acted as impulsively childless and reactionary as Donald J. Trump. So this is what my cousin wrote back. Donald talks to God and he repents. I would not want his life for any amount of money. And if everyone did not judge every move he makes and judge ourselves the same way, there would be no difference. God does the judging, and when we judge someone none of us have ever met, we will be judged twofold. So I wrote back to my cousin, I agree the media is hard on him, but his public persona is abrasive and non-gracious. And then I wrote, since we never met Donald Trump, how do we know if he talks to God? I know he is surrounded by Christians praying for him daily. When he goes into the public square, he finds himself being agitated, combative, and starts swinging. And then there's a Christian woman who was in my church in Beverly Hills. She wrote, Trump is definitely a street fighter who comes out swinging and is often abrasive, which makes me cringe. But I cannot argue with his results. Peace agreements in the Middle East, improved economy, fewer regulations, stronger borders, freed hostages, opportunity zones in depressed, needy areas, tariffs that have brought back production to this country, money for black colleges, locked up for decades, nearly 300 constitutional judges, two constitutional judges on the Supreme Court, oil dependence from the Middle East, lower taxes, removing abortion funds from our trade agreement with Mexico, fighting for the sanctity of life, supporting law enforcement. Unless you listen to something other than mainstream media, you won't hear much of what he's accomplished.
True.
So now you guys can comment.
There's a lot there. Do you want to go first, Daniel? Or?
Yeah, I'll go first. So, I mean, that's a really, really great thread you have going there with, you know, it looks like it was three people, but it's true. I was going to say that too. I mean, like, it's really interesting to me whenever I talk to people who are really against Trump, just Trump haters and stuff. And when you ask them, so what are the policies that you hate about Trump? And they really can never really give you one because, I mean, really what it is it's what he says and his demeanor, you know, and he's a cocky guy. I mean, he's a New Yorker, you know what I mean? Like, and I think if he didn't come off the way he came off with, you know, when he launched himself for president, I mean, his comments are obviously, you know, like, were very inflammatory. He pissed off a lot of people, including myself when I first heard it. But, you know, as I, you know, like, analyzed him, you know, and really, like, you know, looked at what he's done, I mean, I'm like, well, yeah, like I said, he doesn't have the right words or whatever, but what has he actually really done? I mean, like, that, you know, in regards to his policies that are really, like, you know, racist or fascist, how people claim him to be, you know what I mean? Like, they're not, it doesn't really, you know, like, it doesn't add up. So that's why I'm not necessarily against him, you know, am I for him as well?
You seem rather tolerant of him.
I am, because I mean a lot of the policies, I think, you know, his motto is, you know, America first, you know, and I think as an American citizen, I mean, like, you want to, especially when it comes to foreign policy, you know, like you said, you know, I grew up, you know, with the Iraq War and, like, having family go to the military. I mean, every president has gone to war essentially, and up until now he's been the only one who hasn't, you know, like.
Yeah,
and that is a huge deal to me. I mean, because, like, a lot of our, you know, our foreign policy to me has been, like, the biggest issue, you know, when it comes to the politics, how we, you know, go into somebody's country and basically, you know, essentially, you know, colonize it, you know, and, you know, we have to deal with it, you know, by sending our kids, you know, like, from all races. I mean, not just you know, black and brown folks. Poor white folks too. I mean, they go over there and risk their lives for somebody's you know, own personal agendas, you know, and our last president did the same thing. I mean, like they stayed in Iraq, you know, they stayed in Afghanistan, you know, and also like was known for, you know, deporting the most undocumented immigrants, you know, in the out of all presidents combined. I mean, and that's something that's overlooked because of, again because of how he spoke, you know. So I'm never really against anybody, you know. Like I look at your policies, you know what I mean. Like I look at what you do in your tenure. What do you do in your presidency? I mean, and to me, ultimately, that is what defines you. And you know, because people are human beings, you know what I mean. Like they're gonna speak a certain way, and some are not gonna like it, you know. And like I said, the guy.
I just don't feel like he gives the legacy factor the chance. Like, why doesn't he do something great, sit back 2 months, and then see how it's received? But he's always out there swinging, saying, this person's after me, this person's after me. He doesn't give that favorability to what...
That way because, of, I mean, I probably, he's been like that his whole life, though. He's not really presidential material, and I think that's why those who really like him because he's not a politician. You know what I mean? He's just a regular guy. I mean, like has a lot of money and you know, he's always been that way.
I just heard a guy put a book out yesterday or this week called White House Inc. And it's about all the business deals that are continuing while Trump is in office. I mean, he owns so much, and yet someone who owns that much is so insecure. He owns condos in like 6 or 7 cities. He has major property. He has at least 6 major properties in New York with hundreds of thousands of investments. And I just don't understand why he's on the defense all the time.
Huh? Well, because he's, I mean, if someone is attacked a lot more than most people, they're going to be either walked all over and apologizing more than normal, or they're going to be defending themselves a lot more than normal, right? And he's not the kind of person that gets walked all over, and he's under attack a lot, so he's going to be on the defense a lot. I mean, I think, you know, it makes sense to me that somebody who's being attacked is going to be on the defense, and he's in the middle of politics and in a time when the country's very divided. And, you know, I think he's got some opponents that are doing really, really bad things. And Jesus spoke, you know, yeah, he talked about love, but, you know, the people that were, you know, really causing harm in the at his time, the Pharisees and the Sadducees, and, you know, he spoke pretty strongly
Sanhedrin,
about them. Yeah, and he spoke pretty strongly against what they were doing.
Well, the Sanhedrin, they had a lot of power in Jesus' time. They were the elite Jews. But right now, nobody in our society really has legitimacy. Like, you have people like the New York Times and the Washington Post printing stories that most people still respect. But then, like you said, in the mainstream media, no, people like you, Wade, don't respect CNN because of their lopsidedness. And we don't respect Fox News either, and the only civil dialogue is on National Public Radio. So it's just I don't see an end in sight to this social conflict that keeps brewing, and it's going to end in bloody warfare, I believe. I'm not sure. Or people would just bicker and go back into their holes, and then they won't give
a shit
about anything.
There is a good option that a lot of people aren't willing to even put on the table, especially Democrats aren't willing to accept, and that's separation. Just, you know, like, just, okay, everybody, just every state is in charge of their own state, you know, and that would save a lot of, that would avoid a lot of violence.
Well, that's true to some extent, and some states, I do think Minnesota and California have done good jobs with the mask rules and stuff. So we're only going to go on the show 10 more minutes because I worked 21 out of the last 24 hours, but I have one pending question for you guys. Now I forgot what I was going to say. It was something along the lines of, let's say COVID was brought over here intentionally, and now we have to deal with it, but is really blaming China going to bring a resolution to all the conflict in America, or are we going to find solutions as a nation to bigger questions that we have to fix?
I mean, I think at this point, I mean, like, whether they, you know, China did it on purpose, I mean, I think at this point there isn't much we can do. I mean, it's all over the world now, so, you know, blaming them, I mean, if we wanted to start a war, that would be a good way to do it, you know? So, like, I mean, like I said, this is a worldwide issue, you know what I mean? Like, it's all over the world, so it's something that should bring us together, and it has not. So, like, I mean, I feel really hopeless, to be honest, like, to see that something like this should have brought us together, and it didn't do that, you know? So, I'm hoping to be honest, I don't think the vaccine is really going to be helpful in the sense that it's going to control the virus, but it is going to control the hysteria, because, I mean, there's people who just won't go out at all, and hopefully that, you know, brings some kind of, you know, calmness to the world, so we can go back to some kind of normality, because, I mean, like, it is insane how much has changed just in the last 6 months, where, you know, there's people who just won't even visit, you know what I mean? Like, they're very extreme about it. I understand, you know, they want to be safe and stuff, but, you know, it's really, really divisive, you know, and I think the vaccine, whether it's effective or not, you know, with preventing COVID, the hysteria should end, because, I mean, people, just to be honest, people, you know, are afraid, and, you know, and most people, when they're afraid, I mean, they don't really think straight. So, we tell people, hey, you know, the vaccine, you know, like, it's like the flu, you know, like, we might catch it, but you can get a flu shot, and it might help you out, it might not. That should bring some kind of, you know, calmness, but I don't know if the vaccine is going to be, you know, available anytime soon, or if it's, you know, going to be available at all, you know, like.
That's a good point, because I work in one of the group homes I work in, there's four men around 58 to 62, and they haven't been able to leave the house since March except for go on a drive. And I asked the boss, when are they going to be able to do something, like go in the mall? And he said when a vaccine becomes effective. But even if they get a vaccine, they're not going to know for 2 to 6 months if it's effective.
Yep.
True.
So, Wade, what's your biggest concern tonight as you guys get to the point now where you're drawing your conclusions?
Well, I mean, I've heard a lot of people, the problem is, how is this going to end? And the problem is, we have a large segment of the population. I don't think it's so much about race. It's about control. We have a large portion of the population that sees no other option. They need to control people. They want people controlled. They cannot accept people not doing what they want. And I think when you have a situation like that where one side wants somebody to conform and obey, and the other side wants to do their own thing and be free, you know, always in those situations, the obligation is for the person who wants obedience to let it go, because we don't have a right to force people to be the way we want them to be. We, you know, unless it's protecting ourselves, but the people that want to control,
I think that's a really powerful point. And that's kind of like that's the crucial center of what our discussion is tonight, because if there is going to be a civil war on November 5th, it's because the other side cannot accept at all what the other side is doing. And they feel like their rights are so infringed that they're going to have to lash out.
Yep.
So don't infringe rights. Let people go. If someone wants to paint their house purple, don't fight and kill them. Let them paint their house purple. Why is it a big deal, right? Like, let people do what they want, unless it, except hurting others.
Yep.
Daniel, don't you feel like living in the part of LA where you lived a long time that people are generally more cooperative because the stress of the city is a lot anyways?
Yeah, I mean, like here, I mean, most people, I mean, with the exception of those who, you know, are going to like massive parties or whatever, are pretty cooperative. You know, you see people with their face masks, you know, when you go to the store, because it's not an issue here. I mean, it's not a political statement here, you know what I mean? Like, most folks who have their face masks is because you want to follow the rules and you want to be able to go to the grocery store and, you know, and buy food. I mean, you know, like, I was never against the mask. I mean, just because, I mean, it's just logic. I mean, you know what I mean? Obviously, like, I'm not wearing the mask all the time. If I'm outside and there's nobody outside next to me, then I'm not going to wear the mask. I mean, there's no need to, but...
Yeah.
I agree.
There's folks who shame you if you don't wear the mask because, you know, you're not supposed to, you know, here in L.A., you're not supposed to, you know, be outside without a mask, even if you're not next to, you know, anybody. And it's really interesting how, like, when I'm walking and I don't have a mask on, and some folks, you know, do have one whatever, like, they kind of just, like, look at you and, like, give you a look and stuff. And I'm like, you can cross the street, you know, if you don't want to be next to me, or I could do it. I don't really care. I mean, like. Like, I'm not going to be wearing it all the time if I don't need to, you know what I mean? Like, it's just,
yeah, like, I have a big
me,
backyard, and I'm not in people's way. If I'm outside, the place I work and the place I live both have big yards, so I can be mask-free if I choose to.
Nice.
But I had one more thing to tell you guys. I do think that people forcing their will on others is going to continue. And the way Don wields his verbal power on our show, like, I think people, like, if they don't have their agendas, I kind of lost what I was trying to say. So, Wade, could you go till I reformulate it in my head?
Well, you were talking something about control, and I wasn't even thinking of the mask. You know, the mask. Like, yeah, like if I'm going to a business, if I'm outside, you know, whatever, we don't need to, if I'm not close to people or if the other people aren't wearing a mask and they're not worried. But if I'm going to a business, I'm choosing to participate with that business and I'm going to, I don't want to put, you know, I don't want to give them trouble. I'm going to put a mask on. I don't want to put them in a position where they have to, you know, lay down the rules with me or risk government trouble, or, you know, I'm going to respect them and wear a mask. And if I'm doing a job that I'm supposed to wear a mask, I'm going to wear it. So, yeah, I don't think it's, you know, it's not that big of a deal to just wear a mask. I don't make a big stink about that. I don't know how much they help, but I mean, I have to admit, I just don't know. Maybe they help a lot. Maybe they don't. But I respect other people in that way, I guess.
I did forget to wear one twice this week in the stores. And a security guard asked me to put one on. So I had to go back to my car.
Yeah, that's a bummer.
But I think in light of, let's wrap, when we're trying to wrap this discussion up, I do think there's a lot of stressor points in America right now, whether it's on the home front just dealing with the pandemic, or on the bigger picture scale, even if we're not particularly involved with any strife, striving for justice. I just think that I don't even know if we should have had a national election this year. Maybe I don't know if we should have postponed it, but it just seems like the wind's been taken out of the sails of this presidential election. There's no momentum at all. No little enthusiasm for Biden, and it just, I feel like things are going to fall apart on some level.
Let's hope they don't.
Yeah, let's hope they don't. If
well,
people don't
have lived
Biden,
through a lot
can't
worse.
Complain. If yeah. Trump wins and people don't vote for Biden, it's like, well, you know, what did you do? So, yeah, I think so, yeah.
And if Trump wins, he is going to attempt to dismantle ACA, Affordable Care Act. So that's going to cause a lot of strife for individuals who can't get good health insurance through their companies. So with that, does anybody have any more vital words to say before I cut the show off?
I just wanted to say thanks for having me again, and you're a great moderator today. Thanks, Wade, for giving us your input too. I felt like this is the best show we had that I've been part of. I know in the past people all over the place, and there's a lot of cutting off, and so I feel like today was very organic, and it felt like an actual conversation. So I appreciate you, Jane, for stepping in, when you need to step in and stepping back, and I feel like that's how it should be,
I feel like we all blended very well, and I strongly appreciate you calling in. We do need callers like you for the show to balance us out. And Wade, you're a big help too between the other two hosts that I won't mention.
All right. Well, they keep it interesting. They've got such different views.
It's very radical, almost like what we were discussing tonight. So with that, I'm going to invite you back before the election, okay? Daniel and Wade, thanks for chipping in, even though you've been on the road. And I'm going to close the show with one of John's songs, okay, you guys?
All right.
Happy campaigning. God bless you all.
All right, take care. Bye.
I offer up myself to you, protected by your hand. My dreams and schemes and all I have surrendered to your plan. I know that I'm inadequate, I stumble and I fall, but still you always pick me up whenever I would call. We humbly bow before you, we love to praise and adore you, we humbly bow before the throne. We give you all the glory, salvation is our story, we humbly bow before the throne. I offer up myself to you, protected by your hand. And all I have is surrendered to your plan. I know that I'm inadequate, I stumble and I fall, still you always pick me up wherever I will call. We humbly bow before you, we love to praise and adore you, we humbly bow before the throne. We give you all the glory, salvation is our story, we humbly bow before the throne. And I need you by my side, forgive me for my sins.